Shopping's making a comeback.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles. Good morning. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Welcome into the morning open as we look at the economy this Friday morning as trading gets started for the day. We jump right in and ask, where's Wall Street? Markets are up right now, 0.2% for the S&P, about 0.25% for the NASDAQ, and the Dow is up 25 points at 10,431. Shares are higher across the board in Europe, and Asian markets closed higher today. The Nikkei tacked on 2.5%. Well, if there were any doubts about the strength of the American consumer, this morning's news on retail sales might help put those to rest. The government told us retail sales were up 1.3% in November. That's nearly double the forecast. We're going to get some analysis this morning from Mike Moran from Daiwa Securities. He's with us live this morning from New York. Hi, Mike.
Hi, Steve. How are you?
I'm doing well. So people are spending more. Are consumers really starting to feel confident enough to go out and buy things again?
I think consumers are feeling a little bit better. I think what happened is late last year and the early part of this year, consumers pulled back sharply. There was hunkering down because of concern about the economy. The outlook now does not seem as bad, and for those that still have jobs, I think they're feeling a little bit more comfortable and more willing to spend. So we're seeing good numbers like we saw in retail sales this morning.
Hey, Mike, give us a little perspective here. You know, everyone's saying, oh, 1.3%. You know, what kind of numbers were we talking about when times were really good?
1.3 is certainly good. We have seen stronger numbers in the past. We have sometimes seen month-to-month changes in excess of 2%, but 1.3 is certainly good. I would tone down the enthusiasm a little bit, though, because part of this increase reflected higher prices of gasoline, and if you were to adjust for that, we'd probably be looking at a number like 0.8% or so, but that's still a very good showing for retail sales.
I don't know if you saw this, but I was reading in the New York Times this value-added tax is gaining some traction as a means to maybe reduce the deficit. Now, this is a tax on every piece of a product's production chain. A lot of other industrial countries have it. What do you think about this here in the United States?
It's a very controversial issue. On the positive side, it is a big revenue raiser, and it has the potential to reduce the deficit substantially. On the negative side, though, it is a big tax, and that would tend to slow down your economy. You tend to see a value-added tax in countries where the government plays a large role in the economy. That is something that the U.S. has resisted in the past. They don't like a large government sector. So if we were to move to a value-added tax, there'd be some concern and fear, I think, that we're moving toward a European-style economy, which tends to be less vigorous and innovative than our economy. A lot of state governments might oppose this value-added tax, too, because it's similar to a sales tax, which is the main way that most state governments raise their revenues, and they view it as competition.
Mike Moran from Daiwa, we appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. A lot of the big financials are trying to pay back government bailout money. The idea is to avoid having to stick to government rules, but still six big companies have yet to pay back the money. And the so-called government pay czar, Kenneth Feinberg, will announce some new rules on corporate pay at those companies. Ashley Milne-Tite has more.
Kenneth Feinberg is eyeing the six firms that are still using billions in bailout money: Citigroup, AIG, GM, Chrysler, Chrysler Financial, and GMAC. He's already slashed compensation for the top 25 executives at those firms. Today's announcement will affect the next 75 highest earners. Eric Moskowitz is with Options Group, a Wall Street compensation consulting firm. He says it's not surprising Feinberg is making another move to limit pay. He says Britain just slapped a 50% one-time tax on bankers' bonuses. And while the US isn't likely to go that far, Britain's move has already met with approval elsewhere in Europe. And
that is setting a new standard for pay practices. And while I think Main Street will welcome it, Wall Street might be up in arms about it.
Some already are. AIG's CEO has been openly at loggerheads with Feinberg over pay restrictions. He says if the government wants AIG to turn itself around, compensation must be tantalizing enough to keep staff from quitting. I'm Ashley Milne-Tite for Marketplace.
You're listening to the Marketplace Morning Report for Friday, December 11th, 2009, at marketplace.org. Day five at the UN Climate Change Summit in Copenhagen. Marketplace reporters Stephen Beard and Sam Eaton are both there. And this morning, our coverage continues with a rift between rich and poor countries widening there. Developing nations have accused the United States of endangering the world by refusing to give them more cash to fight global warming. From Copenhagen, Marketplace's Stephen Beard reports.
The numbers just keep getting bigger. Developing nations now demand $200 billion a year to help them combat the effects of climate change. Their chief negotiator at the Copenhagen summit says the U.S. should stump up the bulk of the cash. He addressed his appeal to American politicians. He said, "You approve billions of dollars in defense budgets. Can't you approve $200 billion to save the world?" Clement Kalonga is a delegate from the southern African state of Malawi. He also says the U.S. should pay up after ignoring the problem of climate change for so long.
We believe it's time now that the U.S., as they come on board, they need to come with a huge contribution to make up for that, you know, lagging behind for the past years.
The Europeans are under pressure to pay up too, and today, after an all-night meeting in Brussels, the EU came up with its initial offer of cash, $3.6 billion a year, and only up until 2012. In Copenhagen, this is Stephen Beard for Marketplace.
China is considered by some to be the world's factory. And today, the Chinese government offered a picture of a factory working at full tilt. Could it be a sign the global economy is coming back? From Shanghai, here's Marketplace's Scott Tong.
Chinese factories put out 19% more stuff in November than they did last November. Stuff like steel, coal, and cars. And to keep the lights on at all those plants, power generation surged the most in 5 years. Also up, Chinese imports, things like iron ore from Australia and oil from the Middle East. But for all the activity, inflation is so far muted. If you cut out food, Chinese consumer prices continue to decline. Early on in this recovery, the Chinese government's stimulus played an active role. But last month, state investment in infrastructure slowed, as did government lending. The private sector seems to be recovering a bit independent of the government, even the export sector. Demand from the U.S. and Europe remains down, but Chinese exports to Southeast Asia gained by 20%. In Shanghai, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
The U.S. House yesterday passed a $1.1 trillion spending bill. It heads to the Senate next week for approval. There's $500 billion for Medicare, another $100 billion for veterans, and a little measure to help the 2,000 car dealerships being closed by GM and Chrysler. From Washington, Brett Neely reports.
When General Motors went into bankruptcy this spring, the company said closing small and overlapping dealerships would save $2.5 billion a year. But the decision had political consequences. David Cole is with the Center for Automotive Research.
What the dealer closures did is brought home the travails of the auto industry to the average community.
Car dealers are often important local businesses who give to charities and members of Congress. The dealers went to Capitol Hill to stop the process. But they won't be getting exactly what they wanted, says auto consultant Alan Baum. Instead, the legislation makes the car makers and dealers meet with an arbitrator. The arbitrator will decide whether some dealers get a reprieve. Though it looks like a win for the dealers, Baum says in the end, it's not.
The agreements that have been worked out are set in such a way that the number of dealers that will actually be brought back to life, so to speak, is relatively modest.
He says GM and Chrysler will get to hold on to most of the savings they had planned for. In Washington, I'm Brett Neely for Marketplace.
CIT Group emerged from bankruptcy this week. It's one of the country's biggest lenders to small and medium-sized businesses. And its bankruptcy was one of the largest in history. CIT ran out of money when the credit markets froze, and it failed to get a second government rescue. Marketplace's Amy Scott tells us what's next for the company.
It took CIT Group less than 6 weeks to wash its hands of bankruptcy. Analyst Brian Charles with RW Pressbridge says CIT's bondholders could have pushed the company into liquidation. He says the fact that they didn't is a sign the financial system is stabilizing.
The smoothness with which this company was able to accomplish this, I think it kind of speaks well to, you know, the market and its increasing willingness, you know, to fund companies going forward.
So has CIT got a clean bill of health?
No.
James Rybakov is CEO of investment banking firm Aiken Bay. He says, for one thing, many of the company's clients are in the retail and clothing business. They're in the middle of their make-or-break season.
And until January, February comes around and see how they did, you won't really know how CIT looks.
CIT's survival is good news for small and medium-sized businesses. They're struggling to get credit these days. But Rybakov says the company will likely have to cut back on its lending as it recovers. In New York, I'm Amy Scott for Marketplace.
There's this economic standoff going on between consumers and retailers. During the holiday season, Americans have grown accustomed to discounts that get steeper as we get closer to Christmas. At the same time, businesses must be strategic with those promotions if they're going to stay in business. Marketplace's Jeff Tyler reports.
More than in years past, the volume of retail promotions is overwhelming Barry Boone. He owns CurrentCodes.com, a website that tracks coupons and discounts at thousands of stores.
My staff is complaining, you know, because this stuff is just coming out so quickly.
But consumers can't get enough.
People are spending a lot more time comparing stores and looking to see who has the better coupons and who has the bigger sales.
So far this season, the best deal Boone has seen is half price. But many shoppers are holding out for discounts of 60 and 70%, says Britt Beamer. He's founder of America's Research Group, a marketing firm which recently surveyed 1,000 consumers.
If retailers don't give them those discounts, they will not likely see those customers in their stores.
At least not until the next big wave of promotions, the day after Christmas. I'm Jeff Tyler for Marketplace.
You know, the White House has made it no secret. The focus these days is getting Americans back to work. Congress will soon put its own plan on the table. Former Labor Secretary Robert Reich is with us this morning to talk about how it's all going to play out on Capitol Hill. Good morning, Bob.
Good morning, Steve.
So what can we expect in a jobs bill, and when can we expect it?
Well, I suppose some combination of aid to small business, a new jobs tax credit, and more spending on energy and infrastructure. The Democrats want to have a bill enacted before we're too far into the gravitational pull of the midterm election next year, so they can look like they've been doing something about jobs.
But even so, Bob, where's the money going to come from, the federal money?
Well, the White House says it's saving $200 billion from TARP, the bank bailout, and will just apply some of these savings to the stimulus. It's a neat argument, Steve, but doesn't really hold water because that $200 billion could easily go back to reducing the budget deficit.
So the real question then is how much deficit spending?
Exactly. And the real problem for the Democrats is they haven't been able to get across to the public that short-term deficit spending to get jobs back and the economy moving again will actually reduce the long-term budget deficit, because obviously the sooner people are back earning money and businesses are back making good profits, the faster tax revenues will rise. Most of the public doesn't really distinguish between short-term deficit spending, which really is necessary now, and long-term deficits, which are worrisome.
Former Labor Secretary Robert Reich is professor of public policy at the University of California, Berkeley. Bob, thanks.
Thanks, Steve.
And finally, if it's your time to exit the social networking world, there's a website to help you virtually end it all. The LA Times says seppuku.com is named after the ancient Japanese samurai act. That's when a warrior would die with honor by thrusting a sword into his stomach. Well, the site looks a lot like Facebook. You enter your Facebook ID and password, a click here and there, and poof, what it calls liberation of the digital body. Yeah, that. I'm Steve Chiatakis in Los Angeles. Have a great weekend. This is Marketplace Morning Report.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.